Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America series in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we'll talk about the political developments in Africa in 2019, especially the masses rising up against some autocratic leaders. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macori. He's the managing editor of VOA's Africa 54. Welcome to the show, Vincent, once again.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You're much welcome. And as regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula is joining us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas. Good evening, Vincent, and our listeners. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. How is Durban?
Durban is fine. A bit of rain.
Okay, thanks very much. As I said, gentlemen, we are looking at political developments in Africa in 2019. In particular, the masses raising up against some autocratic leaders. In the last 60 years or so, since countries of sub-Saharan Africa started becoming independent, democracy there has advanced unevenly. During the Cold War, many African states turned into Soviet or U.S.-backed dictatorships. Afterwards, some nascent democracies made notable gains, but others ended up backsliding. Now, recently, in the 8 years or so after the Arab Spring, transfixed the world, some countries in Africa once again lit up with protest. In April, popular movements in Algeria and Sudan forced the ouster of two long-serving autocrats. Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika, who resigned on April 2nd, and Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who was removed from power on April 11th. So, let's Vincent, 2019 has been quite a year on the continent politically.
Oh, yes, most certainly. There has been a lot of action across the continent, and I think you can say that it's been a year of awakening among the masses. People have come to kind of realize the power they have. In a number of countries, we've seen things being shaken, whether it is in Zimbabwe, Sudan. We saw what happened in Sudan. Nobody could foresee Omar al-Bashir being ousted by popular uprising, and of course with the help of the military. But the reality, I think, throughout the continent is that first the masses are getting to a point where they realize they have the power to come up against even the most autocratic, the most repressive regimes. And for those who have been relying on the support of their fellow military men, because some of these are actually military men who have been sitting pretty and complacent because they have the confidence of their comrades, they are also coming to the very rude shock that even their fellow soldiers get to a point where they feel the pain of the people. And sometimes they personally are affected because sometimes things are not really trickling down to every soldier, and therefore they are finding themselves in a very uncomfortable situation where sometimes the military turns against them, sometimes because they're listening to the masses or because they themselves are fed up with one of their own who has been in power for too long. So it's been a very remarkably dramatic year, but I think it is not only a reflection of what's happening on the ground, but it's it kind of tells the story of what can happen in the coming year and maybe many years from now.
I see. Suleiman, some people have said some people underestimate the power of the street.
Yes, some people underestimate it, but now I think it is obvious, it has become obvious. It is not even an option for the demographics have changed. The challenges are becoming harder and harder. The leadership, which has been there for years and years, cannot manage the challenges. While they can stagnate the political leadership, Other areas they cannot stagnate them. The economy, the economic development, economic factors, they are dynamic. They are changing. Some of them went to, as Vincent has pointed out, some of them went to power when during the Cold War days, when economies were based on ideology. Then from there we came to the era of liberalization. Liberalization, which meant IMF and World Bank coming in, structural deficit program coming in. Then from there we go to globalization. Then from there, now we are in the fourth industrial revolution. So someone who came in power during the times of the Cold War, you cannot keep up with the pace of change that has been going on. Almost every decade, there are new economic challenges, and they have not been able to rise to the occasion of all of these challenges. That is why the masses have caught them. The young people, the generations have changed. Now they cannot catch up with the needs of the new generation. The new generation has got its own challenges. They have got their own needs. And these people are already rusted. They cannot manage to move there. So it's not even an option. It is going to continue as decentralized. It is a reflection of what is going to happen in the near future.
I see. But Vincent, there is also this parallel. As we saw in Egypt, Algeria, Sudan, it's the youth, the labor unions, the political opposition parties that combine and raise their voices, go on the streets. But then there's at some point, the military, as you said, mentioned, come in. Some of those military leaders in the previous regime come in and then assume power. So how do they figure out, or how do they, because these people need the push of the military to get.
Exactly. Yes. The thing that has happened is that, remember, when it first happened, the people were very, very hopeful. They celebrated when the military overturned those of their own or came to their support, like in the case of Egypt. The same thing with Zimbabwe. But in fact, the first few months or the first few years have been a kind of a trial. And some things are new, so it's trial and error, because it was never in the history of Africa, it was never the case that the masses uprise and then the military overthrows. Usually the military just used to overthrow a civilian government and take over, or maybe overthrow another military guy. Now, the masses, of course, have forced the militaries to react. And sometimes they come to power because, in a way, they've been in power behind the scenes. But what is positive here, regardless of the fact that they're having to grapple now with the new military rulers, like in the case of Egypt or even in Zimbabwe, they're civilians, but they're really military, is that the fear of the military has dissipated among the people of Africa. Not many countries used to stand up against the military. Now, they know, and the militaries also know today, that nobody's terribly, terribly scared of the military. They can stand up against the military. So whether it is Egypt, Zimbabwe, or Algeria, or whenever, or even Sudan today, the citizens have come to a level where they are so empowered. We saw what happened in Sudan, where the citizens insisted on the kind of government they wanted. And they told the military, there is no way we're going to accept your way. We have to reach a compromise. There was negotiation. So for me, I think what has happened and what has changed is that progressively the citizens are getting to understand that even the military gets its power from the masses. And nobody is so scared of the military anymore. So those who are in power today and enjoying the support of the military, or who have come in and taken over again and started enjoying those kind of powers that the gun can give you, have to expect the masses soon enough in all these countries are going to come up to the military gate and they're going to demand change, and probably they're going to realize now that we do not want a military guy to be replaced by another military guy. We want a purely civilian.
I see. Suleiman, as Vincent said, it's a try and error issue as people learn what to do next. The Zimbabwe experience here is very interesting. The military came out, sort of staged a mini coup, but then fronted one civilian as the head, like in the names of the current president in Zimbabwe. That model is quite interesting because things there have not changed at all.
Actually, the biggest problem which the continent is facing with these overstayed leaders is that by the time the leader is overthrown, he has totally destroyed the opposition. Because there is no succession plan, the overthrow is followed by a vacuum. That is why, in some cases, the military is forced to come in. Because most of the opposition leaders who have been trying to oppose them are either killed or they have been rendered useless. The countries are over-dominated. You find that the regime is existing only with the fortune hunters that are following that particular regime. So in such circumstances now, you find, as Vincent has said, it is a trial and error, because at that moment, people don't know even how whom to run to. Sudan was lucky that they had professionals who were credible enough to stand in. But in some other countries, they just overthrow the regime and there is a total vacuum. Even in Zimbabwe itself, it had to be an internal, because within the external, there was no ready people to take over the government. But that one goes ahead to warn those leaders who are still in power that much as they are still insisting with the forces which they have, with the forces of repression which they have, they should know that at one time, as Vincent has said, now the young people have got nothing to lose. They are going to overrun them, but the countries have to be destroyed first before the fire attacks.
I see. Let's go back to Vincent, to the example of Sudan. The Sudanese people, unlike the other ones, insisted. Even when the military men came in, the people didn't go off the streets.
And there is a reason.
And at least they managed to put some of their own at the center of power.
And this is not an experiment just for Sudan. This is actually a lesson for the entire continent that the Sudanese learned as a consequence of what happened in Egypt and in North Africa and what happened in Zimbabwe. The citizens have learned from those countries in Sudan. They learned that if you just replace this military guy for another military guy, there's no difference. Mm-hmm. Or for another military endorsed person, as it was in Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. So the lesson the Sudanese got is that, no, the military has to listen to the masses. We are not just satisfied that Bashir has left power, but we want a change in leadership in terms of not another military guy, but we want civilian rule. Now, of course, there were so many reasons why they accepted this compromise of having the military as part of the system, but they got great deal of what they demanded. There is a civilian component in the government ahead, and of course there is plan for elections where you do hope that there will be really purely civilian people coming in and being elected members, or if anybody in the military wants to in the future become a politician, they can leave the military and become a civilian politician. Now, what I think the Sudan model is going to do is going to transform the way people approach these changes, these revolutions. Mm-hmm. They have realized, and observing the Sudan case, that you must hold on to your demands, and you must insist, and you should never be scared of the military. The Sudanese people realized if you stay on the streets long enough, the army is not going to shoot you, because at the end of the day, the armies are the children of the citizens. The masses are related to those guys, and they're not some kind of aliens who are completely cut off from this society. So Sudan is an amazing model that will be followed, I think, by many countries.
I see. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue a discussion of the political developments in Africa in 2019, especially as the masses rise up against some of their autocratic leaders.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight we're discussing the political developments in Africa in the year 2019, especially as the masses raise up against some of those leaders that have overstayed in power. Now, gentlemen, there's some interesting aspect. There's been a new set of leaders, some of them former military dictators, turned Democrats, and others who were part of the system and moved up the ranks, a few outsiders, some football stars. I'm talking about Liberia. Five of the of them are very crucial. Like, we have Abiy Ahmed of Ethiopia. We have a new president in Angola. We have the guy in South Africa, Ramaphosa, there. We have Tshisekedi in the DR Congo. Mm-hmm. People moved up there and then shook up things. Somehow, people believe he didn't win, but he's now in power. How do you see this set of leaders moving ahead? Because we had some many years ago, had some set of leaders whom people thought were promising. The Kagames, the Musevenis, the Afawakis, the Zenawis, they became a disappointment, most of them. So how do you see these ones?
Personally, I think first, there is another level of awakening that has to happen in the continent, that citizens have to realize that the continent's leadership will not be shaped by change of God. Is not the new person who will make a change in Africa, that it needs a real look into the building of institutions that will guarantee the independence of countries and democratic institutions that will guarantee that an election is going to happen at a regular time, that those elections will happen in a fashion that will allow for citizens' voices and power to really have meaning, but also the safeguards in the law that we can, for example, have the different organs of government that are strong, you know, the judiciary that can guarantee you not only a free and fair election, but also justice, so that you don't have to deal with oppressive regimes that can do whatever they want and get away with it. So the second phase of the awakening, I think, of the masses has to be about the realization that the insistence should be not just the change of the guy in the state house or the palace, but the building of powerful institutions that will safeguard all these gains. Otherwise, what you're going to see is the repetition of the same mistakes. And some of those guys who have been elected, it's not about that they are necessarily terrible people, but you elect them, put them in a position, and they find a system that works for them at that time. It's easier to inherit those kind of institutions and make them work for you. They're just human. So the citizens, well-meaning leaders, will have to realize that you have to create institutions, and those institutions are the ones that will protect the citizens against the excesses of human leaders. It's not about the change. So I don't necessarily have any hopes about all these leaders. What I think is important now is to think about what institutions have to be put in place.
Suleiman, before you come on the same question also, maybe you should point out that maybe, for instance, in South Africa, those strong institutions have helped at least keep the country stable and transition from leaders. You know, go ahead with the other question.
Truly, as you put it, it's the institutions which have helped South Africa to go on. We have gone through so many challenges. Each leader has had the challenges. Mandela had the challenge, as you said, post-Cold War. Then came Mbeki with the globalization, and then later on was hit with the AIDS epidemic. Still, the institutions came in. Then came Zuma with globalization and the Chinese entry and corruption. The institutions helped us. Now up to Ramaphosa, we still have challenges of stagnating the economy and the corruption and poverty. Still, it is the institutions which are helping the country to move on. Without the institution, we are facing a lot of challenges. Now, before I go to the new leadership, I wanted to make a small comment about the hope of the youth taking over. My worry is that the sort of leaders who are remaining, we are likely to see a bloodbath on the continent. Yes, Bashir went, but after some lives have been lost. Yes, Abiy Ahmed came to power, Desalegn left, but those persistent demonstrations in Ethiopia, quite a number of people were lost. Now, when you look, Kabila went, he was ready to kill as many as he could. Now, when you look at those intending ones, it seems as if it is going to be heavy bloodshed. Kagame is being shaken from all angles. He's ready to die with many. Nkurunziza is being, the one in Burundi is being shaken from all angles. He's ready to die. Museveni is being shaken from all angles. He's ready to die. I can't see Idris Deby going without fighting. I can't see Bia in face to the Anglophone problem. So many people have died, even in Western Congo, even Obiang. So all of them, my worry is the amount of blood which we are likely to win. For sure they are going. For sure they are not going to stay forever. And sooner or later they are going to go one by one. One, the way the Santos went, then Kabila went, then Yaya Jammeh also went. They are going to go, even the next generation is going any time. But I'm worried about the bloodshed. I don't know how the continent and the world at large is going to handle these particular people. For the new generation which is in, I think we are promising and we have hope. I think given the fact that we have got another Nobel Prize on the continent from the new generation, it shows that they have got at least something which they are going to do there. They don't need to start. They know where to go. The template is there. We have got examples from elsewhere. So all they need is to be sincere to the people and to be sincere to themselves and build institutions as recent as said, observe human rights, institute genuine democracy, not the fake democracy which those who have said have been using, allow transparency, fight corruption, then they'll be able to go through. Of course, the economic challenges are huge. The fourth industrial revolution is coming with challenges, so they have to be up to date. Luckily enough, they're young enough. They are able to move with the time, unlike the old ones. Like, for example, Museveni, who thinks that the fourth industrial revolution is about being on Twitter, instead of looking for ways of preparing the country, the economy of the country for the new economic fourth industrial revolution, is just busy tweeting and wasting time for the young people.
So
I think for this young generation, for them, I have hope that they'll be able to change things the way they have started.
So I have a slightly different take on this. You know, I see the excitement, for example, in Ethiopia, sometimes a little bit of excitement in the DRC. I personally think that it is reminiscent of what happened soon after independence of some African countries. There was a lot of excitement because Canada had been under colonial power. Mm. And when we got independence, people were so happy that we were free. But unbeknownst to them, the new leaders inherited seriously flawed dictatorial constitutions.
Mm.
And because human beings are inherently, want to abuse their powers, those constitutions are actually the ones that created the foundation for this repressive regimes that Africa has had to contend with.
Colonial era laws and all that.
Exactly. Because power is a very terrifying thing and is a very, very sinister thing. There is nobody who can promise you that they are going to do certain great things out of their own goodness, because power has the potential to corrupt, and power has corrupted even the most well-meaning people, or some of those that we thought were well-meaning perhaps were not even well-meaning. They just wanted to get in there. So my My take is that this, instead of being too excited about the Abbeys or the Shisekedis, there should be a focus on how can you guarantee that one's Abiy Ahmed, for example, who may really be transformational, that once he leaves power, he gets out of that position, Ethiopia will continue on the same trajectory.
He even has a handle organizing an election.
Exactly. If today Abiy Ahmed is out of power, Ethiopia could go any direction. Mm. So if Abiy wanted to get my Nobel Prize, not the one he just got, the real one, if I was to give him an award, I will do that if I see him actually focusing on building certain institutions in that country that will guarantee that when an election happens next time, Ethiopia will have an amazingly democratic system and it will be unshakable because of those different institutions. That has to be the focus, not the goodwill of Abiy Ahmed. He, as an individual, may have this personal ambition to do amazing things. But what happens when he's gone? Same thing with other countries. Bobby Wines and the Besigyes should not be focusing so much on getting Museveni out of power, because you're telling the Ugandans, for example, to just trust Bobby Wine. Just trust Besigye. He's a good man. He's going to guarantee you good leadership. No, it is not about Besigye. It's not about Raila Odinga. It's not about Tshisekedi. It's the institutions. So the focus of the opposition, the focus of any leader who is in power today and means well and wants this country to be progressive into the future should be the building of those institutions, a strong legislature, a strong and independent judiciary, a strong electoral system. If a leader can do this today, he will impress me, because it means he has a future of his country in mind. But if all you're doing is doing some amazing things today, but you have not created the safeguards for the future of the nation, it doesn't matter, because once it's out of the picture, country slides back to anarchy.
Suleiman, 5 seconds, your last word.
Yeah, the silver bullet is simple. Democracy, transparency, inclusiveness. It is possible to do it. Kufuor took over from Rawlings when the economy of Ghana was on its knees. He rallied the country in a bipartisan effort, and he started picking up the economy. From there, Atamil, from there, John Mahama, up to today, Ghana is moving. Senegal is moving. Botswana is moving. South Africa is moving. So long as there is rotation, so long as there is democracy, inclusiveness, transparency, and the people are rallied together, they will build the country. If they play the games which the rusted leaders, those who are still waiting to be thrown away, did, then they will fail. But if they follow the template which others have failed, the Senegal, the South Africa, the Botswana, the Mauritius, they'll be able to make it. Exactly the simple fact.
I see. You have 10 seconds.
And exactly, that is the point, that there has to be deliberate, building of these things. It shouldn't base it on just the goodwill of the people.
I see.
Of the leaders. That's all.
Well, that wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor, VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show. Our producer tonight was Dan Brown, and our engineer was Nelson Lopez. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear this program if you go to our website and click on Reporters Roundtable. You'll listen to it. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.
This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bird.